you know, there's only one answer. I'm going to fire myself. Then I'm going to sleep on it like I do decisions now. And then when I woke up in the morning, I just had this complete clarity. I thought, no, that's a cop-out. You know, you can be completely objective. I rehired myself under one condition, which is no sacred cows. And I've been there ever since. And I felt like a newcomer again. And I still feel like a newcomer. And now I'm trying to bring that once every 5 years mentality to once every year or once every month. I mean, I'd love to do it every day. That newcomer's mentality is so powerful.
This week on the Courageous Podcast, we had Bracken Darrell, the CEO of Logitech. Awesome interview, awesome guy, great leader.
Yeah, he's just no ego. He's focused on the future, pensive. I love that he's basically said he knows what he's good at, he knows what he's not good at, gives his team permission to be his team. And it's just amazing with thousands of employees, how he's been able to lead that team forward.
And he spends time getting to know people, developing relationships. So I just thought he was amazing. Somebody that is inspiring that you want to go work for.
If I ever went back and worked for somebody, this is the guy. Hands down. Like, he's just inspiring. He leads the way. He gives you enough rope to try things. He wants you to try things. My favorite thing he said actually was throw success and failure out the window and experiment. So come listen. Enjoy our time with CEO of Logitech, Bracken Darrell. Quite an interesting time we're having right now. We're stuck in quarantine. And where are you choosing to quarantine?
I'm quarantining just south of San Francisco, Atherton, California.
And how's it been so far?
Well, you know, it's a terrible thing for everybody, you know, just globally, business, economy, unemployment, the poor people who are sick and those who care about them, and the people who've died. But so it's terrible, but it's, you know, you got to make the best of everything, you know, and I'm trying to really make the best of it, the most of this situation for myself, for Logitech. So it's actually been quite transformative in a way.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, you and I met about 18 months ago, and I was struck by how thoughtful you were. You're pensive. I mean, it's just nice that you think of CEOs and they're go, 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 where there's a lot of ego. And first of all, I appreciated you giving me some time of your time. But speaking of time, like, do you feel like you carve out think time all the time, or is this a different type of time? That's a mouthful, by the way.
No, that's a good question. I mean, am I thinking more now than I was before? I'd say in the beginning of this, I was. You know, I had more spare time where I was really, you know, because I think the company hadn't adjusted to being fully remote. So in the beginning, I definitely had more time. Now I'm finding it feels more like it did before. Oh, we've all recalibrated. So I don't think I'm spending more time thinking. I've always spent a lot of time thinking about the business and transformation and starting over again and all those things that I love. So I'm probably not doing less of that now than I was before.
Well, I definitely want to get to your current role as CEO of Logitech, but let's go back to a little bit of the journey. So where'd you grow up? Any siblings? Are you close to your family?
Yeah, I am. I grew up in Kentucky, and I stayed there all the way through high school. I'm very close to my siblings. My mom and dad both passed away, but I have two older brothers and a younger sister. My one sister, one brother live in Kentucky still. The other brother lives in North Carolina or in Virginia. And yeah, I'm super close to them. I was the third of four.
Got it. Wildcats fan? Do you bleed blue or bleed yellow or bleed red, I mean, or none of the above?
I don't really bleed any of them. Growing up, I was, believe it or not, an Indiana fan, which, you know, if I'd been more vocal about it, would maybe be very unpopular with my friends. I just liked the kind of basketball that Bobby Knight, you know, preached and made happen back then until he kind of became kind of over the top sometimes. But I'm a basketball fanatic. I like to play more than I watch. So I still play, you know, three times a week until this COVID-19.
Is sports where you first kind of learned about being competitive, or where did your drive come from to get all the way up to being CEO?
I don't know. You know, I certainly played sports from a very early age. You know, I had two older brothers who were mixing it up all the time, especially my next oldest one, Bart, and I would play everything together, you know, and basketball together. And we were about the same height. I grew up faster than he did. And so it was super, super competitive from that standpoint. In terms of drive, you know, that's like the billion-dollar question. Everybody wonders, where does drive come from? And, I think maybe in my case, it came from a combination of, you know, we didn't grow up with very much. So, you know, we're always, you know, kind of hustling to get things going. And then being the third of four, I had a very talkative older brother and a very charming and funny next older brother. And the my little sister was always the baby, you know. And I was just, man, I was a deaf mute. I didn't say a word. I mean, if we ever ate at a dining room table, I was totally silent. So I think I was kind of committed to trying to prove maybe to myself that I could be a part of the game outside of the house.
When did that change for you? When did you start becoming, I guess, more vocal and actually speaking up for yourself?
Well, I grew up, you know, really fast. So I'm about, you know, five, almost 6 feet. And I was this height when I was, I think, 13. So I was naturally looked up to in a sports context, you know, just physically looked up to. And then I had these older brothers, so I was also, you know, pretty athletic young. So I developed this addiction to being, you know, kind of the natural leader, the strong, silent type, you know, and I really was silent. And then when people grew up around me and I stopped being, you know, bigger than everybody else, and I went from center to all the way to point guard, I stopped playing basketball after my sophomore year in high school because I realized it wasn't going anywhere. I really loved the leadership thing. So then I really sought it out. And that's probably when I transitioned from just being kind of a person who played sports and was kind of naturally pretty good at them to a leader who had to work at it. And since then, I've really worked at it.
Do you read, listen to podcasts, watch Netflix? I mean, do you consume content on leadership or just for fun?
I used to consume a lot. You know, I used to read everything on leadership, every business book, everything you can think of. And then I started to take a lateral step over and started reading stuff kind of in the vicinity, like biographies and World War II histories and World War I histories. And then I decided I like everything. So then I started really moving even further afield and studying art history and physics and, you know, quantum mechanics. And that's where I am now. And I'm reading a very wide range of things. And I find the analogies that you can bring from those things into business are super helpful in terms of getting to creative ideas or different ideas.
So before we get into Logitech proper, I mean, you've had a pretty good run here. I mean, so Harvard Business School, not a shabby school. I went to executive education there. I tried to take credit for that. I was there for a week and bought the sweatshirt. Shame on me. But I'm like, oh yeah, I went to Harvard. I got to tell you, walking around there, Bracken, it feels different. It just felt different. I felt like I'm now obligated to do something meaningful with my time in a good way. I enjoyed that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then you were, again, prior to your time at Whirlpool, you spent a half decade at P&G and General Electric. And, you know, I mean, did you ever think you'd ever go on to be a CEO? Was that something you wanted?
Yeah. When I was about, I don't know how old I was, maybe 20 or 21. I wrote down, I still can picture this green piece of paper, but I don't know where it is. 8 goals I had in my life. It wasn't a bucket list. They were like progressive goals. And one of those was to become a CEO. And at the time, it's because I wanted to have an impact, you know, and I really wanted to have a bigger and bigger impact on the world in a positive way. And I started out thinking I'd go into politics, and then I kind of lost my excitement, enthusiasm for that. I actually started at the legal profession, and then I did an internship for a judge near my hometown, and I lost my, it seemed so bureaucratic and slow. And then I thought, well, politics, maybe I'll do that through business. And that drifted away somewhere around, one of the many times when there was a political scandal, and it just seemed so slow and bureaucratic. And so I landed in business as my path. And that was like 21, 22. And that's when I really said, okay, if I'm going to do that, I want to try to run something so that I can maximize the impact. And I want it to be a large organization. And that's really, so that goal is, it goes back pretty far, all the way to 21, maybe 20.
When you were president of Whirlpool, in your mind, were you thinking, I'm going to be the CEO of this company? Or did you see it even back then as, you know, I'm going to stay in the moment, learn here, and we'll go from there?
No, a light went on for me somewhere before that, where I realized, actually, you know, you can have a big impact out of any chair, and you can kind of run anything out of any chair. I realized, you know, that, like, in my job today, I technically, I guess, you know, lots of people report to me, but I feel like the reporting goes in every direction. And actually, forget about reporting. I feel like I can make anything happen right now in this company that I can imagine. And I also feel like anybody else could too. If it's rational and it makes sense and you believe it's right, you probably can. So I kind of became proficient. I don't need to be a CEO. I don't care if I'm ever a CEO. I can have a huge impact wherever I am, and so can everybody else. And so I lost any, that goal of being a CEO just kind of evaporated for me. I couldn't have cared less. I just wanted to have a big impact.
So of course now, ironically, you are the CEO of Logitech.
Yeah.
Responsible, you know, for captain of the ship, hundreds of employees. When you have that many employees, by the way, I mean, is it hard to communicate, or like, how do you communicate routinely with all those people?
Well, we have 4,000 employees, not including our factory, which flows up and down. So that can go up to, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 on top of that. Well, you know what? You know, it's really weird about our company. It's really weird. It doesn't feel that big, you know, so we, you know, and I feel like I know almost everybody, and almost everybody knows me. You know, these tools, like, you know, these communication tools make a big difference in that regard. But I don't, I end up talking to people at all levels all the time. I feel like my, you know, I've always felt like, you know, my job is no different than everybody else's job. It's just different responsibilities. Nobody's job is more important. And so I really, it feels very small to me, and I do probably communicate a lot, mostly by video, lots of, when we're not in the COVID-19 shelter in place, I travel a ton. I try to run into people in the hallways. I try to go to lunch with people, and I want to know everybody. I'm super sociable like you are. I just love people, and I love people at our company. So I try to just stay connected to as many as I can.
I watched a video on CNBC of you doing an interview about staying fresh. And you actually, I think you said you fired yourself, and then you asked some of your other leaders to fire themselves. How did that create some clarity for you and just being a leader and thinking about the business as a whole?
Well, I had been in the, you know, Logitech then for, I'd been the CEO for 5 years. I've now been there 8, and now the market cap has gone up 800%. Back then, I think it had gone up 500%. And so I was thinking about, you know, we were so different 5 years in than we were when I started. You know, the heart was the same, but boy, we changed so much of the rest of the body, you know? And so, and I was thinking, you know, God, you know, the way things are going, we're going to actually need to be even more different 5 years from now than we are now from back then. And then it made me think, am I the right guy for the job? You know? And I don't have a huge ego. I don't need to be the person that does it. So I really thought very objectively, am I the right person for this job? I mean, I'm a stockholder too. And so I sat down and I wrote down what I thought the job is going for the next 5 years. And I wrote down, you know, kind of what I am. And I tried to compare the two, and I literally did that. And then I thought, you know, I'm a pretty good spec. I mean, if you're going to go out and interview somebody for the next 5 years, I would probably get in the running. You know, I'd be one of the top 5 candidates if you could, I mean, the kind of people you could attract to that job. But then I thought, well, I get a big problem though, which is I own everything we've done so far. And a lot of this is going to have to be torn up, thrown out, started over again at some point. So I thought, it's not going to work. So then I thought, you know, there's only one answer, is I'm going to fire myself. Then I'm going to sleep on it. Like I do decisions now. And so I did, you know, so I literally, in my mind, I really fired myself, and I went to bed that night. And the next morning I really thought, you know, probably I will tell my chairman that we're going to go, you know, we need to start to build a recruit of somebody else. And then when I woke up in the morning, I just had this complete clarity. I thought, no, that's a cop-out. You know, you can be completely objective. You can really start over again. You've got to get your head in the right place. So I rehired myself under one condition, which is no sacred cows. And I've been there ever since. And I felt like a newcomer again. And I still feel like a newcomer. And now I'm trying to bring that once every 5 years mentality to once every year or once every month. I mean, I'd love to do it every day. That newcomer's mentality is so powerful.
It's so powerful for someone who wants to work for you too. I mean, I got to tell you, I've been an entrepreneur for 15 years now. It's even weird to say it, by the way, because you're just in it. You're just doing the work. But I left thinking, from our breakfast, I left thinking, if I ever went back and worked for somebody again, it would be somebody like you.
No, man, that's not. I'm very flattered.
No, I mean, you're inspiring. I would work for you. Well, you're hiring interns.
You're practical, bullshit. Yeah. If you're hiring interns. I'm not available yet, but if I do get thrown out of this job, I will absolutely call you. I would be an intern for sure.
No, it completely resonates with me. I've said, like, even with my last creative agency, it was a 70-person agency. I, on the record, saying, like, I fired myself. I felt like a fifth-year senior. Right? Yeah, I just couldn't make – I couldn't do what I wanted to do there. It doesn't make my partners bad. It doesn't make, you know, me right. It just meant this cocktail of the three of us. I just couldn't take it where I wanted to take it. And so that's how Courageous started, was I wasn't sure what
that's
tomorrow
cool
held, but I just knew it was time for me to move on.
That is really cool. I didn't know that story about you, but I love that. Super powerful.
Well, it's also terrifying, but I guess we're talking about courage here, so.
Well, I'm always doing something, you know, creatively that's usually not very good. And one of the creative things I've done that's not very good that nobody's ever seen is I wrote part of a novel, and the novel's about something I'll tell you about, but there's a character in there who is a serial entrepreneur, and the serial entrepreneur has been super successful, four or five, you know, successful, you know, exits in, super, and last few really big, and he's in his sixth one or something. And in that sixth one, you realize what the background is, which is he grew up with nothing. He gets these things up to this state, and then he realizes, you know, that what really drives him is this need to create from scratch and being completely objective. So he actually exits. He gives away all the money he made, all the way down to he doesn't even have a car. He rents an apartment. He gets another idea. He raises money again. He does it again, and then he gives it all away. And he does it all again. He's not doing it for the good of the world. He's doing it because this is the way. This is what drives him. Mm.
And why isn't this book done?
I don't know. I need to finish it. The lack of confidence in my writing skills.
Well, let us know how we can help. We'll help. Okay. We'll get in there.
All right. Oh, I may take you up on that. I'll be the intern. And you guys write the book.
That's an interesting character, because I also heard you on your TED Talk just talk about this mindset of staying hungry. And you talked about, I think, three different principles or something. Being humble, creating your hunger, cleaning your slate. Where did you come up with that? I mean, was that kind of an innate thing from when you grew up, or was it something that you just developed over time, and has it helped you lead other teams?
Well, I grew up, you know, you said, you kind of answered the question for me. I grew up with, you know, my siblings and I grew up with really very, very little money. You know, we had the same one pair of jeans, you know, we'd wash them, and literally we would, the day that we'd wash them, which is probably, don't tell Chip Burgess, believe us, or else he's a friend of mine, but yeah, we've probably washed them once a month. He says he never washes his, but we probably washed them once a month, and we would wear them wet that day because we literally didn't have anything else, you know. And so we grew up with so little, you know. And so I would see my friends who were members of the country club and this and that, you know, and I would think, yeah, man, if I had what they had, imagine what I could do. You know, it's like, it's a limitation. And then as I got older, I realized, actually, I had the big advantage. This was the best thing that could ever happen to me. I was such a gift, and it was the hunger. So I think that may be where most of the drive I have comes from, and that drive to overcome. And so I really feel that big time. And I equate that hunger to, you know, it's like a mental hunger. So, you know, it literally is like when you have nothing in your stomach responds to it. So the way I create that hunger now is through goals, either literal goals that I really literally write down or kind of idea goals. Because when you really lock in on something, you really want it. It's just like hunger. You know, you need to fill it, you know?
Yeah. My brother was branded the smart one in our family. He's 4 years older.
Yeah. Mine too.
He's the Georgetown law.
I've got three other smart ones. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
I was branded as good with people.
Okay.
So that was a stain, man. It was a stain. I mean, I'm now looking back on it, I call it a negative blessing.
Yeah. But a negative blessing. That's a great description. I'm going to steal that. Take I'll it, give man. You. I'll give you credit. I'll That's give you credit. All... My new book that I'll be interning on.
Called Negative Blessing.
Negative Blessing. That's a. we have the title.
I'm like, wait a minute.
And one character.
Yeah, one character. So no, but honestly, I feel the same way. I feel like that gave me, and I'm competitive as all can be. So it gave me, like, how am I going to do this not being the smart one? Like that, yeah. It really took a long time to get over.
Great. That's great.
All right, so I've got a few business haikus. You know, I'm a creative guy, so I just want to run a couple.
Haikus?
These are three. Yeah, I've got three business haikus to run by you.
Oh, I love it.
All right, so you got to tell me what you think of these. All right, let's just get your response.
I'm ready.
Okay, number one, cheerleader leaders, it's nothing to cheer about. Steer clear and beware.
Yeah, I like it.
So that's working for you.
Yeah, it works for me because I was probably one of those cheerleader leaders for part of my career, which is really not good because all you are is Pollyanna positive all the time. You don't tell it like it is.
So now is like, are you just leading by truth all the time or like what's your go-to?
Well, I tell you, there's no substitute for candor. You know, I get better and better at that all the time, but I'm still not as good at it as I should be. You know, tone it like it is, speaking from the heart. You know, being critical of yourself and of other people and especially of ideas and is so valuable. You know, the if you could take two words out of your vocabulary, take success and failure out of your vocabulary, just, you know, leave them somewhere out in the yard and don't look for them because they are useless because you should make a lot of mistakes and you should get used to being called out for the dumb things you do and calling yourself out when you can. And so I think candor is really the real tool for that, challenging and candor.
I love that. Chuck success and failure out the door. That's great.
Big time.
All right. Here's number two. Ready? Business IQ number two. Change will never change. It never takes a day off. Change just won't stay put.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one. I like your haikus. You're good at this. I've got another book in the works that's called Haiku. I'll tell you about that one off the air. I love it. You know, change just, and you know, actually change just gets more and more athletic and faster as it gets older. You know, as time goes on, you know, change, everything accelerates, of course. So, you know, your haiku about change is perfect. It's just never going to stop.
Do you think that's true? I mean, of course it's true, but like I've heard more, you know, Moore's law, but I think that I'm getting that right. But I've also heard like the older you get, it just time speeds up because, you know, when you're four, a year actually feels really long. When you're 40, a year feels shorter.
Yeah. Well, I have a very strong, the rest of this podcast could now be wasted on my theory on that. but I have thought a lot about exactly that. I'm a time junkie and a physics junkie. So I agree with everything you said. I think that's the reality that, you know, the numerator, you know, stays the same, the denominator gets bigger. So your perception is things get faster. And I believe that, but I think there's another way to look at that, which is if the numerator is change, is new experiences or surprises, and the denominator is years, then you can actually slow time down by increasing the novelty that you experience in your life, in your career. So if you seek novelty on a serial basis all the time, you can actually slow time down. And I can prove this because you've had some experience in your life where you suddenly tried something completely new. You got into a new relationship, you did something, and all of a sudden everything just went in slow motion for you. And that's this experience. So we have there's really no one really understands time very well. So we can all define it the way we want. This is my definition, which is time is very dependent on the degree of surprise to your brain. Your perception of time is correlated with novelty.
I love, again, as somebody that loves to try courageous things, it kind of fits right with the show, right? Like the more you do new stuff, the slower time is, and the more it's like you're around for a long time.
Yeah, and this show is so novel that I think people will be watching this and they'll feel like they've been watching it forever, either because it's novel or because it's so boring because of your guest. But this is going to seem like a 10-year show.
But we told you this was a 7-hour block, by the way, right, Bracken? So
we're 4 hours in, right?
This is great. Yeah, I'm sweating. Okay. All right, so here's the third, the final haiku. What must die today for something new to bloom forth? bang bang status quo.
Yeah, I like that too. I have to interpret that one. Give you my interpretation of that.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, I think that your nature, which we're all part of, is a constant state of renewal. And so, things do die and other things sprout from them or in place of them. And, it happens in business, it happens in outside in my yard behind me. So that's the thing. But the real way to maybe make that happen in an accelerated way is to kill off the things you should be killing off and try to drive an acceleration of that. Otherwise, it can go too slow. And so that's the status quo. So pick up your gun and kill off the things that you are, and maybe that's too violent, but kill off the things you shouldn't be doing and replace them with things you should be trying and experimenting with.
How much time are you actually spending thinking about your current business today versus innovation in the future?
I'm a poster child for, I bet I spend 80% of my time in the future on new things, on new category development, new ideas, new things we can push into, ways to drive, new ways of approaching things. So, I have the luxury of doing that because I've got an incredible team, and everybody else probably on your show who's ever come on said that. I would encourage, and Ryan, some of my team. I don't want anybody trying to recruit them. But they're amazing. And so I have the luxury of being able to spend more time in the future.
And how do you help others on the team also, take on a mindset of being visionary? Are there certain tools or leadership skills or things that you do to help people sit in that space with you?
I think I'm not a very good coach and I'm not a very good mentor. I always thought I would be really good because I played sports. So you kind of think you play sports like, you think, okay, I could do that. Coach is doing that, I can do that. And so I just naturally, up until a few years ago, thought, well, I'm a good coach because I was a good player and I understood what the coach is trying to do. I think I'm not a very good coach and I'm not a very good manager. And there's a lot of things I'm just not very good at. And that's one of them. So I'm not sure I am helping my team be, better visionaries or better, envision things. Unless it's by leading by example, which I'm not even sure I'm a very good example of things. So this might sound like false humility, but it's really how I feel. But it's working, I mean, our company works well. And for some reason, I think it's because I stay out of people's way. We've got amazing people and I only get involved when I think I need to, or when they think I need to. So maybe it's because I don't run the company. The company runs itself because we've got such great people.
Okay, well, here's a different one. What about inspiration? Where do you draw inspiration from? Because you're definitely inspiring from what I've been able to see in my research. So what inspires you? And then how have you seen that, parlay into your business?
My grandfather said about my brother one time, my oldest brother, the brilliant brother that went to Columbia for you, is my older brother, Bobby, but all my siblings are brilliant. I'm not. But he said about my older brother, he said, your greatest strength, my grandfather said, your greatest strength is that you're so easily inspired. And that's probably mine. I am super easily inspired. I can be inspired by the beauty of a leaf or the analogy of the veins of a leaf and how it compares with how information flows through our company, or by the performance on stage of something that I can't believe that a human being could do, or by an innovation idea that we may never achieve, but it's just unbelievable that we might be able to do it if we aligned all the resources and made it happen. So I'm super easily inspired. And that's a terrible answer because it's completely useless for your audience.
No, I think the idea of the idea of looking for inspiration is not, to me, it's like find the inspiration in the little things sometimes. I don't think it's a terrible answer.
Okay, well, it's the best.
I don't think I'm pandering. Am I pandering? Is this pandering?
Didn't sound like it to me.
I think that's like, that's even like mindfulness, just like appreciate. It's like gratitude to just appreciate the little things. And I mean,
yeah,
there's so many different ways to be inspired. It's not always just like literature, right? Or content. It's walking outside.
You're so right. Now I'm going to get really sappy and corny. But I had this moment about a year ago where I was you know, I was on a bus somewhere. You know, who rides a bus anymore? But I was on a bus somewhere. I must have been in an airport or something. But I was looking around the bus and I was thinking, I'm going to look around this bus and find the beautiful thing in each of these people. And I went face by face. Of course, I didn't tell him that. You know, I would have been probably arrested. But I went face by face, and I looked at each person. I thought, what's beautiful about them? And it really was amazing because I could find something beautiful in every single person. And then I thought, you know, actually, that's kind of the way the world is. I mean, you can find something beautiful. It's often the most simple, elegant thing about something or somebody that is really beautiful. And which goes back to design and design thinking. And so I kind of do feel like it's the simple things that really are inspiring.
Yeah, to me, and I got to be careful that this doesn't come off pandering too as well, but it's inspiring to hear a leader that has total or at least pretty good awareness, self-awareness. I mean, like you said, you know what you're good at. It sounds like you know what you don't love to do. Maybe you're not good at, but like, how do you help somebody? Like, if you're going to like say, hey, Ryan or Ryan's, here's the tools that I would try to, we try to make it easy on you. See, with the Ryan's here's a tool that you should use to audit yourself from a self-awareness standpoint or anybody. What would you say?
Well, first of all, you can call me Ryan for the rest of this podcast, because then there's no way any of us can screw up.
Yeah, right.
The one tool that maybe other people haven't heard, some of your audience might have, is a tool that it's not really much of a tool, but it's a tool, is an OGSM. It's actually OGSMT. So it's objectives, goals, strategies, and measures, or you can throw in tactics. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think I read the dust cover of a Peter Drucker book one time. And I don't think I'm exaggerating, but I don't think I got beyond like the second page. It was really good, by the way. But he had this process in there. Yeah, he was, for those of you who don't know him, he was the first management guru, you know, like early thinker. Boy, he was a great thinker. And he said, you know, every holiday, every December, I go away to my cabin, wherever it is. And I don't know if he had one or he rented or whatever, but I go away there and I really evaluate myself. I've set goals for the next year. Goals across every area of my life, and then I evaluate my performance against those goals. I didn't read any deeper than that, so I probably literally had read a paragraph that said that, but it really clicked for me, because at the time I was working for P&G, and we had this OGSM tool, and I was coming home at night with three little kids that were climbing all over me, and I was a disaster from a personal finance standpoint, and I was not a very good father, or you know, at least relative to what I could have been, or anything. And I thought, it's terrible. I've got these great tools at work. I don't apply them at home. So I started building a game plan, which was a vision and then objective goals, strategies, and measures for every area of my life. So I picked out eight areas of my life, from finances to health, to, you know, everything, even at hobbies, and later I had second careers. And so I started doing that and started really being rigorous about it. And I put that plan together. I put it in an Excel spreadsheet. I measured as much as I could, some things every day, some things once a year. And that tool became really helpful for me. And I'd score myself at the end of every year. I never made better than a 68. I still do it. I do it a little more limited way. But, you know, usually at this point, people look like they've been hypnotized. And they're like, what in the world is wrong with this guy? He is so anal. But it really was a super helpful tool for me. Maybe the process in between doing it wasn't as helpful as the fact that every year you go through and you really critically evaluate yourself. And I was cold-blooded about it. And in that process, I would always write down kind of what are my beliefs, what do I believe in, what are my values, and then what am I good at, what am I not very good at. And I think somewhere 3 or 4 years in, I realized I'm terrible at things that are kind of administrative, really takes work for me. You have to do them, you know, because otherwise you die. And I'm really bad at some things, and I don't know what I'm really good at, to be honest. I still haven't quite figured that out yet, but I know the things I'm not good at.
You've been keeping track of this list for however many years. You're not sure what you're good at yet?
I'm not sure what I'm good at yet. I'm a good learner. That I'm good at.
I think that's just like the opportunity to always learn about something or create knowledge is super helpful, because it stimulates ideas. So as you think about other leaders that are up and coming, you've had this experience now. Are there things that you would recommend to other leaders who are on their path to C-suite?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. First, get that concept of failure out of your vocabulary and success. But I mentioned that earlier. Take them both out of your vocabulary and really focus on constantly experimenting and trying to learn. And then you can scale things that look like they're working. It works in business. It works in your personal life. It works in everywhere. You know, once you get something that works, then double down on it for a while. And then it'll stop working at some point. So you better have a couple of experiments going on the side. It's true with your career. You know, you guys have this amazing podcast. You probably got something going on the side that's just you're experimenting with, maybe two or three things. You know, maybe you don't push them as fast as you should. Maybe they go, but you're experimenting. It also gives you a little thrill that you've got this other thing going on. It actually makes it, when you go back to the day job, like you enjoy it more because you've got this diversity thing going on. So I think that's a big one is, you know, have your own, have an experimentation mentality and always be experimenting in your job and out of your job. That's one. I'm making these up on the fly, by the way. This is a good
test. It's great. I love it.
They're relevant. the second one is, you know, I am such a believer in being yourself. And it took me, you know, maybe 40 years to figure out how to do that. I lived inside somebody else's world for so long, all the way really up until I came to Logitech. You know, I was a super, if you met me when I was at PNGG, you'd say, man, he's a really good fit for these companies, you know. But the truth is, I probably wasn't a very good fit for any of them, but I really fit in. Inside me, I'm a rebel. If you know me a little bit better, you know, you tell me that I need to do something a certain way, and I won't necessarily express to you, but I want to do it exactly the opposite or completely differently, or I want to invent a new way to do it. There's a rebel inside me that never goes away. It's just always there. But I learned how to live in this world where you don't, of not being rebellious. Now I've learned how to be a rebel and not be completely disruptive all the time. But it took me too long to figure that out. And so if that resonates with anybody who's listening to this, you know, be the rebel, be proud of it in yourself. You don't have to hang your flag outside your window or put it outside your house. Love it. Love that in you, because that's what makes you unique. And there's a rebel in everybody.
I'm actually working on my next book called Rebel Haikus.
Really?
I'm halfway through Rebel Haikus. Just bought the URL. If you wanted to come in on it with me, just maybe consider it.
I'm in. I'm under one condition. I told you I've got a few other things that are always stalled out somewhere. My other book is a book called Haiku. And it's and I need help desperately. This one, you know, we'll co-intern and we'll let the other Ryan actually write the book. But I really need help on this, but it's a great idea. And when you hear it, you're going to fall in love with it. And we're going to make a movie out of it. It's going to be a movie. To be a movie. I don't know who the star will be, but it's going to be a movie.
Well, it's got to be Ryan, who probably Gosling. Ryan Gosling.
Ryan could be the – Ryan, or this there Ryan. You go. I think the other Ryan could be the – you be the director. I'll be the apprentice, and Ryan can be the star.
So we're coming down the stretch here. Just a couple more questions. The one I'm most curious about, since this is a podcast about courage, is maybe like, what's like the most courageous endeavor you've been part of in your life? It could be business, maybe one for business, one for life. And I know that's not an easy question.
It's really hard. You know, you asked me at one point when I first, or maybe the second time we interacted, you know, was a question about courage, and I figured out that courage, it seems like courage is a hard one. And you're an expert in this. And so I'm thinking on the fly, what do I think courage really is? I think courage is doing things that are worth doing when you're really scared. That's probably courage. And so I don't think I have a ton of examples of great courage that I've done in my life, because I've usually had such conviction around the things that should have been scary that they didn't feel scary to me anymore. And I mean, I've never skydived or bungee jumped, and those probably would scare me some, but I've had such conviction. So it's really hard for me to come up with something where I'd say it really required a lot of courage. And that's really a terrible thing to say on a podcast about courage.
No, it's not. I mean, look, you know, the big joke, kind of the big secret, and I'm glad this, I'm saying this at the end, because if someone actually made it to the end of this, it's like they've earned it a little bit, right? So versus the first 2 minutes. I was working with a group yesterday, and at the end of the session, I said to them, look, in some odd, crazy way, I'm trying to take the courage out of courage.
Love it.
You know, like, how do you make it as easy as possible? Give people the clarity they need, the conviction they need, get them all the way up so it just feels like purpose is leading the way versus the scary stuff.
I love it. You know, I love it so much when you say that. I mean, that is the, that to me is, if everybody could apply that into everything in their lives, it changes everything. And that's why you've got this podcast. That's why you're the visionary coming up with this idea, because that is the secret to big steps, is taking the fear out of it. And I call it risk management, which is the most boring term you could possibly come up with. Yours is much sexier. But if you can take the perceived terror out of these things, you can do anything. Anything. Almost anything. Anything you can really imagine.
Well, Bracken, thanks so much for coming on the show. Looking forward to writing these books with you. We have a lot of work ahead of us.
Well, we've got a lot of apprentice jobs. Ryan, you're in charge. You know, the other Ryan.
I'll quarterback.
Yep. And I think we got to write these books. We're going to make a movie out of haiku. It's going to be a movie. You'll see.
Thanks for your time, Bracken. Thank you. Take care in quarantine and stay in touch.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot for having me on. Take care.
Bud. Appreciate it.
Bye. Bye.
Join us next week with Landon Donovan, the legendary USA soccer star. We dive into competition, coaching, and finding his identity after soccer. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us 5 stars, subscribe, and leave us a comment.